name is Jake Brewer. I'm from a small town named Columbia, Tennessee, the mule capital of the world. I get to cheat because, you know, it's my guy. And my word is dividends, which, not surprisingly, is on the thing behind me. Also, I want to, I've never been introduced with my failure to graduate from the Naval Academy. I appreciate that. Actually, I did. So I went there 2 years, but it's an interesting part of my story. So I wanted to be a fighter pilot. I decided not to be a fighter pilot, and figured out that public service is something that was really important to me. And actually, two of my most formative experiences were actually in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and Pyle, South Dakota, working with some of the communities there when I was in college. And so that really led to a lot of. I come from a very rural community in Tennessee. And the idea of creating access and opportunity for people who would not otherwise have that access, whether it's a digital access or whether it's opportunity to education. I came to some of the worst public schools in the country by rating. Always used to joke that like somebody makes it out every year, so I just happen to make it out. But not everybody has that chance, so a lot of my career has really been spent looking at that, as Mary Alice said. Some of it was thinking about the next generation of stuff. How we think of, start thinking about that now, which I think some of you mentioned actually in the way that you described today. But a lot of it is also thinking about where we are and where we want to be is a way to think about where we are. We think about trajectory, right? That we want to go up and not down, so we need to be thinking about there so we can create that. And I don't know if I can reach
this. Okay, I can do that for you.
You know what, before I do that, I'll just say, I put the mission statement of our team. So both Nancy and I work on the same team for the Chief Technology Officer of the United States, which is, I think, the coolest government title because it sounds very, very big. But what's interesting is that the word technology is in there, but what we're really thinking about is opportunity creation. That's usually what we're really thinking about. In fact, little of what we do is deeply technical all that often. And so we often describe our work as ensuring Americans can participate in the economy of the future. So talk a little bit of what that means. Go next. Okay. So we're going to start with the super technical nerdy stuff, and I'm going to kind of give the overview, and then Renna will get a lot more specific, hopefully. But this is a quote from President Obama in January. It really defines, underneath everything else, that we really need to make sure that everyone has access to the communication infrastructure of today and of the future. This is not a future thing. This is a 10 years ago thing at this point. We're well into the need for every American to have access to affordable, high-speed, ubiquitous broadband. That is how we communicate, that is how we exchange goods and services, it's basically how we run every one of our businesses and educate our children, our families, and you name it. And we've made a lot of progress. I mean, it's one of those things that, didn't we remember the ozone layer in the 90s? I promise it's going to go back around. I always find it fascinating that when we actually get something pretty right, we're actually making good progress, we kind of just stop talking about it. Like, you notice the politicians in the campaign don't talk about jobs right now. Jobs. It's because the unemployment rate went down. So all of a sudden, we stop acting like that's a problem. And we've kind of moved, in some ways, past some of the broadband conversation because we've actually made a lot of progress. Right now, better than anywhere else in the world, you can, like, use your phone to get access to data and information, those sorts of things. This is kind of some good stuff. Laid 175,000 miles of broadband cables. It's kind of boring, but it's actually pretty interesting to think about the billions we spent and what it's actually done. But I'm going to talk mostly about kind of where we are, that some of the problem areas, if you go to the next one. And yet, this is kind of a challenge that we often have, which is in the lowest quartile of income, the people who have access is just barely over 60%. It basically means we're leaving 40%. And this is access, by the way, like basically means they can get it somewhere. You guys are on the front lines of this. It means they probably can go to a library or a school. We have many photos, we've used them in speeches, where you watch a mother driving her children to the Starbucks parking lot or a hospital parking lot and sitting outside while they hand their phone back to the back seat and they just sit there with the car running while a child does their homework on the phone. You can imagine how difficult that is, right? Or filling out a college application from their phone, again, from these points where they kind of have a theoretical access, but it's not real access. It's not kind of the access we want to provide. We want to make sure that our families have access to. So as good as we're doing, we still have a really significant gap. And this is, by the way, in the youngest quartiles. As soon as you get older, you start talking about the aging population that we need to care for as well, provide for. We're doing even worse. Let's go to the next one. I was like, this one, there's actually, I could do this for almost every city in the United States, but we're in Washington, so I thought I'd just use Washington. This is internet adoption as correlated with income. Surprise! The green is good. The red is bad, and we don't even go through orange in DC. There's usually an orange stage or like a yellow stage where it's kind of correlated. There's some access, but and the income is kind of somewhere in the middle. So basically, DC is super rich and has really high broadband and like super high speed internet access for a lot of it. I don't know if you guys can see the map or not. And then it's almost literally the railroad tracks. This is not a metaphor, this is actually almost literal in this case. That this is associated, and it's the same is true in almost every part of the country. So if you go to the next map, so this is the same map for the whole United States, more or less. Same levels of income, same levels of internet access. And so if you look at the red, this is where I'm from, down in here. But you can see, when you think about tribal communities, where a lot of y'all are coming from, that they overlay tremendously with those regions. And so when we think about the problem that we're trying to solve, when we think about the next generation, like Marilis talked about, we also have to solve the 10 to 15% of the population doesn't have access to solve. Can you go to the next one? And so what we've been talking about a lot recently, and hopefully this is kind of like an overall idea, is that when people talk about broadband and networks, they talk about things as though they're technical. And they talk about this digital revolution and all these things that it has brought. But one of this report that I wish I could have used graphics from, but I can't because it doesn't come out publicly until September 22nd. I'm just going to hold it up. this is a report that I'm not supposed to show you yet. Talks a lot about deep case studies. These are anecdotally things that I think everyone in this room would know. But deep case studies from 190 countries that just prove that digital revolution, as we've thought about it, new access to technologies, it does create new opportunities. That is true. It can advance economies, it can create new businesses, and spur entrepreneurial activity in all kinds of ways, pull people out of poverty. But it only does it for a very certain and small percentage of the population. What it actually does, if you don't have the other part of your ecosystem, is it actually bifurcates or splits your population into people with access and people without. It actually creates a worse overall economic situation. And so what we kind of started to start thinking about is instead of bridging a divide, getting to someplace else, we actually need to create and grow and cultivate dividends. Next one. Thanks so much for the other. And one of the ways we've been thinking about this is an old analogy that I've used often, and I hope it resonates with you guys. It's a little silly, right? Is that technology is not a piece of the pie? Well, often, you know, when we think about stuff in government, people will say, we need to think about this, we need to think about that, and then also technology. Right? It's like we add to the pie. And really, what technology is, it's just a facilitator. It's just a tool underneath all those other things. You don't bake a delicious meal with a pan. Well, take it back. The ingredients that go in the pan are what the delicious meal actually is, right? It's the thing that you actually want to eat and consume and be part of and enjoy. The pan just helps you do that. And by the way, a pan can just as easily be used to whack you over the head. It's one of the other things. And technology can often be that too. But when used appropriately, it can bring all these beautiful pieces together and all these ingredients and really create a thriving society. And that's where we ultimately want to get. Next one. So this is kind of the model that we've been thinking about recently. And hopefully, this is where a lot of working with you all more closely, when Mariela said that she was excited that we wanted to come. We were very, very excited to come because there's no more important institution connecting kind of what amounts to the connective tissue of community, not just for information, but for culture, for bringing people together in public space than libraries and museums for that matter. But just to kind of go history on y'all, this comes from organizing, actually, like a grassroots organizing. So I spent a lot of my career as a grassroots organizer. A lot of our team kind of has weird roots as grassroots organizers and technologists, which that then
and a lawyer.
And a lawyer, policy people. It's kind of a weird bunch, right? And so thinking about 1.0 organizing, it looks like I've got a message, I'm going to tell you about it by knocking on your door, getting you all together, and then you're going to just think the thing that I think, hopefully, if I do my job really well. You're going to adopt, you're going to vote for me, you're going to spend money with me, you're going to do whatever. 2.0 organizing, probably most embodied by the Obama campaign in 2007, 2008, was this idea that, okay, I've got a message, but now I'm going to empower you to basically take my message and do with it what you will. At the end of the day, though, it's still my message, right? It's still my message and how you can amplify what I have to say or what I'm thinking or what my campaign is about. And so we want to take it a step further and go 3.0 methodology is that we are, as a government, don't actually have the answers. It's not our job to have them. You have the answers. You are in your communities. You know what's working, what's not. And almost, we have not yet found a situation where there is not a solution already found by a community. So it's not our job to tell a community how to do this, what to do. It's our job to identify what those solutions actually are, to connect all of that together, kind of become a pan, be a platform off of which, or call it a garden, I guess, gardens of democracy, to steal a phrase from Eric, around which all those pieces that already exist can grow more fully, to make iterations, to adapt, to be agile, and really bring a lot of that together, to help, to learn, to educate with others. So maybe one thing that's working fantastically in Alaska would also work in Oregon, but by virtue of all of us bringing our ideas here together, that we can then grow them, and then to scale them. So our job at the White House is to make sure that the whole U.S. Has access to these very best solutions and ideas. And that's what we think technology can really be about, what it can do, and really making libraries a part of it. I don't know if this is going to work or not, but I told Nancy I was going to try it. So you guys have to tell me, fortunately. In the tech world, I came to DC from Silicon Valley. And we'll often talk about Amazon. People generally familiar with Amazon, for better or worse. It's been really badly in the news lately. But people will talk about this idea of a pivot, this moment in which a company changes direction. And Amazon is really well known for first being about books. They kind of got their foot in the door with books, right? But you don't really, I don't hardly ever go to Amazon to buy books anymore. I buy all kinds of toilet paper from Amazon. And so people often say books are to Amazon what like the first thing you do that you're most well known for is when you're changing. And I kind of think the same is true of libraries and how people, so books are to Amazon what books are to libraries. Amazon now does all the other things ubiquitously, right? And also, libraries now provide all of these services. It's all about culture and information broadly, not just about which books you have. And you guys know this better than anyone, but I think maybe for citizens, it's not always, they kind of still associate that. But there's this really interesting opportunity to kind of create new ecosystems and stuff together with that kind of new idea of how do we create broad access to all the stuff you guys have. That's it. So I will get out of your way. I think I went over my time, so I'm sorry.
No, good.
By the way, thank you. I have an addiction problem to visual affirmation. If you like look down at your phone or stare blankly at me, then I think you hate me. And you guys are awesome. So you're smiling and nodding, and it made me feel very good.
That's great. Very nice. So my name is Raina Thiel, and I'm going to use the mic here. I'm not super quiet, but I figured that I might as well since it's here. I just want to say thank you to Mary Alice for inviting us to speak here today. This is an incredibly important conference for us. The White House is very focused on issues of technology and broadband access, as Jake spoke about. It's great to see LaDonna Harris here. Wonderful to see you. I also have to point out my Aunt Bev, who's in the second row here, in town from Alaska. We were actually, kind of a funny story, we were talking last night during dinner, because she came in a couple days early to visit me, and we were talking last night, and I was like, yeah, I'm speaking at this conference tomorrow on digital inclusion, and she goes, I'm going to that conference, that's the reason I'm here, so we had a funny little laugh. But anyways, I don't want to talk for all that long, but I do kind of want to give a kind of a general frame on like what the president is focused on when it comes to tribes. In my role at the White House, I am the tribal liaison for essentially the entire country. So I, you know, do a lot of traveling. I talk to a lot of folks on a daily basis, and it's an amazing job. Especially because this president who we have today is so focused on tribes in a way that we haven't really seen, I don't think, in history. And one of the pieces of evidence behind that is the Generation Indigenous Initiative. Who's heard of Generation Indigenous? Hopefully, a few people. Okay. Good. That makes me feel like I'm doing my job. So Generation Indigenous, it's actually one of the first, it might even be the only presidential initiative in history which focuses on tribal youth. The president just launched it in December of 2014, and it is just, you know, this incredible kind of movement that we see kind of sweeping across the United States. And it's a very broad initiative. It's a kind of our tagline is improving the lives of Native youth. And a big portion of that is making sure that we're connected, making sure that our youth have access to information and technology systems. And that's exactly what you all are here today to talk about. And it's just, it's amazing to kind of see the evolution of Generation Indigenous, because really the starting point was in June of 2014. I don't know if folks saw the president's trip to North Dakota to the Standing Rock Reservation. Some really great visuals, some great pictures came out of that session. But really what came out of it for us at the White House on the policy level and on the political level was really that he and the First Lady were able to sit down with Native youth when they were out in Standing Rock, and they just had the most incredible conversation with these six high school kids in a really small classroom. We just put them in this like, tiny little classroom, like a very intimate setting with the President and the First Lady. They spoke to them for over an hour. And these kids were just, they were so brave and they were so amazing. They were between the ages of 15 and 19. And they just told them their stories. They were just really, really honest with the president and the first lady. And when they walked out of that room, you could just tell that they that their perspective was forever changed when it comes to tribal issues. And that was really the beginning of this initiative. And it's really just kind of blossomed over the past year and a half. We just had the first ever White House Tribal Youth Gathering in July, which was a huge success. We had over 1,100 Native kids there from across the country. And if you have not listened to the First Lady's remarks from that conference, I really encourage you to, because it's just the most amazing remarks. And it really just shows the President and the First Lady really understand these issues and really prioritize our Native youth. So anyways, that's kind of the frame I wanted to provide on kind of what we're focused on at the White House when it comes to tribal issues. You know, you see kind of broadband access integrated throughout all of our policies, including Generation Indigenous. We have, you know, Bureau of Indian Education Reform has a huge broadband component. We have, of course, broadband in multiple initiatives that Jake touched on. And so this is really like one of those pillars that we're incredibly focused on. So thank you all so much. I'm going to stop talking there, and hopefully we can have some questions.